This is the Voice of America broadcasting worldwide in our continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 14. Live coverage from Mission Control Houston will begin in 15 minutes at 20 hours 15 Greenwich Mean Time. And now from Washington, here is the news in special English. The Apollo 14 astronauts are speeding toward a splashdown in the Pacific Ocean about 1 hour from now. The Voice of America will broadcast the splashdown beginning directly after this news program. Astronauts Alan Shepard, Edgar Mitchell, and Stuart Roosa report that all is going well as they prepare for their return to Earth. Weather in the splashdown area south of American Samoa is reported good, with warm temperatures, mild winds, and calm seas. After splashdown, the astronauts will be lifted from the spaceship onto a helicopter. Then they will be flown to a United States aircraft carrier. The splashdown of Apollo 14 will mark the end of a 9-day space trip and man's third landing on the moon. The space agency says the astronauts are returning to Earth with 2 times as many moon rocks as brought back by the other Apollo moon flights. They also are bringing back the best series of detailed pictures ever taken of the moon. As in other moon flights, all 3 astronauts will be placed in quarantine for 21 days. They will remain away from other people to guard against the chance that they may carry dangerous germs from the moon.
This is the Voice of America broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 14. Today, the landing and recovery of the spacecraft Kitty Hawk. Splashdown is set for 21 hours, 4 minutes GMT, about 48 minutes from now. Astronauts Shepard, Mitchell, and Roosa will land at a point in the South Central Pacific, south of Samoa. The prime recovery vessel USS New Orleans is stationed at the landing point to pick up the Apollo 14 astronauts and their spacecraft. Stuart Spencer will report on downrange activities from time to time, but now to the Manned Spacecraft Center and VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner.
Yep. End of montage. Right here in Houston, we're listening to the air-to-ground transmissions, doing some last-minute figuring on the figures being given by Mission Control to the astronauts in space. And with us to help describe this return to Earth of Apollo 14 is astronaut Fred Hayes, who has been a capsule communicator throughout many of the exciting hours of this mission. Fred, welcome to our Voice of America audience, and thank you very, very much for assisting us in giving a vivid description of this reentry and return to Earth. It was not long ago that we were hanging on the edge of our chairs, hoping that you and Jim Lovell and Jack Swigert would get back safely in Apollo 13 after your accident. Welcome.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Now, what is the last information that you've received that you have there on the timeline? We're right on schedule, aren't we?
As best I can tell, I haven't heard any of the air-to-ground lately. They should be right now running through some tests on what they call the EMS entry monitor system. This is the system that you use as a backup in case the primary guidance system happened to fail on the way down.
For about 8 hours, Stuart Roosa has been in the command module taking sightings on stars, particularly One star sighting after another using this computer-associated optical telescope. He takes one angle at a horizon, another angle at a star, lets the computer interpret that and tell him the precise point of their location in space, comparing this with the ground tracking network, Goldstone and Honeysuckle Creek particularly. And everybody says that it looks good. And the last I heard is that they are going to have a down angle of minus 6.39 degrees, and right. You want to help us describe what that means.
Well, before I do that, I happened to be there when Stu was making the first half of those set of star sightings he made, and it was pretty interesting. They had taken with them, clear from the moon, the vector. That is, a vector is basically a name for something that tells you where you are, and it's three components of velocity and position. And Stu has been working that vector all the way back to the Earth. At the same time, of course, Houston here is tracking a spacecraft, and they have their own idea about a vector and where the spacecraft is at any time. And actually, that's all we had to go on Apollo 13. But at any rate, it was very interesting, exciting to me to see that at this latter phase of marks that Stu had been making on stars, the vector he ended up with was only different from the entry angle, which you just mentioned that Houston has, by 0.05 degrees, 0.05 of a degree. He had the altitude of the perigee low point altitude down to within 0.4 of a mile. And he had another term that is very...
That's about half a kilometer.
Right. Another term that is very critical to entry, a term called UDOT, which if we get that number down less than 400, it's a very good number, and you'll be able to make the entry quite satisfactory. He had that down in the 30s.
What you're really saying is that Stu Roosa has done a really expert job of celestial navigation. Then,
it has been. Very good. Of course, the prime is still Earth tracking, so it really was an exercise to see how well that kind of operation could be done in case of a loss of communications. But as soon as he was done, of course, the vector that the Earth has derived is pumped into the computer, and that's the one they're going to go with for entry. The angle you mentioned, the 6.39 that they ended up with, is an angle defined by, if you can point the...
Here's Apollo Control.
57 minutes. We're coming up now on 30 minutes until entry. And in the next few minutes, the crew aboard Apollo 14 will be bringing their entry batteries online in preparation for separation of the service module in about 15 minutes. Of course, when the service module separates, the fuel cells, which are the primary source of electrical power during the bulk of the mission, are also separated. Batteries are used from that point on during entry. Crew will also be using or be checking out the sequential and pyrotechnic systems used in deploying their spacecraft parachutes before going to separation attitude and separating the service module and then finally back into the entry attitude. Apollo 14's velocity is now 23,770 feet per second, and we're 4,568 nautical miles from Earth. ECOM now reports the batteries are online.
That's Doug Ward giving us the latest that he sees from there in Mission Control, where you left just a couple hours ago. In fact, we watched you through the early morning hours, Fred, there in Mission Control, talking to Stu while he was going through these star sightings. In fact, you were his ground link with the MISFEN tracking network throughout that period of time. We interrupted you there. You want to finish that analysis?
Yeah,
I was
just... Support room here in Mission Control reports that... The prime recovery ship is on station, and all support aircraft, the five helicopters, and four fixed-wing aircraft are airborne and on station at this time.
Spacecraft is moving 26,000 kilometers per hour, according to our conversion from feet per second, as given by Mission Control.
Yeah, we were discussing the term entry angle, and as I was about to say, this is measured... it's the angle between the velocity vector and a line drawn tangent to the Earth's atmosphere at the point of contact. The numbers you'd like to see are somewhere just a little above 5 degrees to about 7 3/4 degrees. The significance being if you're at the low end of the corridor at the 5-degree end, you have... a very good chance of skipping out.
Like a rock skipping across a pond of water.
Yes, and the problem, I mean, you can skip out, but in this case, if that...
for your information, Samoa Rescue 1 and 2 are on station, and helicopters are in the air.
That's Bruce McCandless.
That's good, Bruce.
As the capsule communicator now, telling the spacecraft that rescue craft were in the air, there in the Pacific. You heard either Al Shepard or Stu Russo say, that's good, Bruce.
The low end means that you don't get enough velocity killed off due to the drag of the spacecraft, so you you do not get down to a velocity we call V-circ, circular velocity, or less, and if you don't get down there, you're kind of stuck in orbit for a long time. The high end represents a vehicle limit due to heating and or a structural limit due to G-loading on the way in. On Apollo 13, we had a problem with continually getting shallow due to the venting that was going on all the time, and I think our final entry angle was about 5.8 or somewhere in there, the results of which in terms of G meant we did not get to as high a G as 14 will get to in their entry.
And the forces of gravity pressing upon you as
right.
You re-enter.
That's correct.
Let's see. I
think
have a
their
G
estimate
load here.
Is 6.2.
6.26 Gs.
Is there a maximum? Actually, that peak does not last too long. But you kind of pay for it. It's you have to kill off the energy, and even though we had a lower G, only 4.5, we sustained it for a longer time. You can either take your lumps big in one large chunk or take it over a longer period of time at a lower number, lower rate.
Fred, let me also tell our listeners about the weather and a bit more about the recovery forces standing by there. Scattered clouds about 610 meters, visibility 16 kilometers, winds easterly about 30 kilometers per hour, and waves are about 1.5 meters. Very gentle, good weather for a splashdown, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it looks like a great day. The only thing that maybe is they have a little higher wind, I think, than we had today out there, but otherwise the South Pacific on that day was about as calm as the Gulf of Mexico.
Where you have
hard
done
to
a lot
believe
of...
that we were in the middle of the Pacific somewhere.
Well, after your hair-raising flight around the moon and back in Apollo 13, I guess it looked awfully good. We recorded a brief conversation with Dr. Don Stalkin of the Recovery Branch here, Chief of Recovery Operations Branch at the Manned Spacecraft Center, and Don explained for us how Apollo 14 is going to make a little faster trip back to the United States by having the carrier New Orleans steam to American Samoa and then move the astronauts and the mobile quarantine facility into a plane there. Here is Don Stalkin.
What are you going to do there from the prime recovery ship on back to Houston that's different?
The plan for recovery is essentially the same as it has been on all of our previous quarantine missions with, as you mentioned, the change in plans to transfer the flight crew at American Samoa in order to get them back to the Lunar Receiving Laboratory and quarantine here somewhat quicker. By doing this, we were able to remove the flight crew from the primary recovery ship, which is the USS New Orleans, at American Samoa approximately 45 hours after they have landed, and place them into a C-141 type aircraft, which is outfitted with a mobile quarantine facility, and fly them back to the Lunar Receiving Lab in Houston via Hickam Air Force Base in Honolulu.
How much time would this save over a normal procedure of steaming them farther to Hawaii or some such place?
Depending on sea state and winds and that sort of thing, it will save at least 5 days, perhaps as much as 6 days, that it would take the ship to transit the distance from American Samoa back to Pearl Harbor, which is where we've offloaded them in the past.
And how will you do this? What sort of mechanical facilities are involved?
After the flight crew has been through their initial medical examination aboard the ship, approximately 40 hours after landing, as I said, they will leave the mobile quarantine facility aboard ship into a double-chambered quarantine airlock where they will change clothes and be decontaminated externally. They'll then leave the airlock and go immediately to the helicopter in essence, the reverse procedure that they went through getting from the helicopter into the MQF in the first place. At this time, the ship will be probably 5 or 10 miles offshore at Samoa, so that it'll be a very short flight to the airfield at Samoa. They will then leave the helo and proceed directly into the mobile quarantine facility, which is already inside of the waiting C-141 Starlifter aircraft, which will bring them back. The C-141 will depart Samoa very shortly and stop at Hickam Air Force Base in Honolulu to refuel, and then proceed directly on to Ellington Air Force Base outside of Houston, where they will be transported to the Luna Receiving Laboratory approximately 5 miles from the airbase.
The actual quarantine for the astronauts, the 3 weeks, begins when they button up in the lunar module on the surface, doesn't it?
This is true. We have a 21-day quarantine period, but we begin to measure that 21 days as soon as they have left the lunar surface on the moon.
Do you foresee, or have you heard whether this will be the last quarantine or not?
There, as far as we're concerned, the quarantine procedures are not difficult, and of course we are regulated by the Interagency Committee on Back Contamination, and as long as they feel that it's necessary to continue these quarantine procedures following lunar landings, we're prepared to do so.
This is primarily from the advice of scientists in the United States and around the world, isn't it?
This is true, and it's relatively cheap and insurance against the extremely remote probability that we could be bringing any contamination back from the moon.
Thank you, Dr. Stalkin, for describing this procedure for us. Dr. Don Stalkin, Chief of the Recovery Operations Branch for the Manned Spacecraft Center. And we're getting a television picture from the carrier from the New Orleans, which is steaming in a circle about 5 nautical miles away from the target point. And all is ready out there in the Pacific, just waiting for this entry. We just heard from Mission Control a moment ago that separation from the service module, that the cone-shaped command craft will split loose from all of its big rocket engine and consumables, the service module, in about another five minutes.
5 minutes, yes.
With us is astronaut Fred Hayes, who has acted as capsule communicator for some of the more interesting parts of this mission. And you may remember having heard him as we were listening to astronaut Shepard and Mitchell on the surface of the moon. And Fred was lunar module pilot on the Apollo 13 mission. And Fred, I know it must have been tough to watch these guys on Framaro, the one you trained for, and unfortunately didn't just quite make.
Well, I'd have to admit I was a little bit envious, but at the same time I was sure proud and happy to see that we indeed did make it this time too, Frau Morrow. And of course that's why I volunteered for the job, to help them out and try to be sure that I made it as easy as I could for them to get the job done.
Because you knew the site, you could give them empathy and detail for which you had trained also.
That's correct, yeah. I think it was an advantage to participate, particularly in the EVA-2, where most of the geology was done.
About another 3 minutes here until separation. You have a checklist which you might help us run through. What are the astronauts doing right now? We're not hearing much communication from Shepard, Mitchell, and Russo.
Well, let's see. They just started into their final switch settings before SEP, and Stu's putting a few control switches in the right positions. Pretty soon he's going to have a drastically changed vehicle. He's going to lose actually the bigger, larger half of it, and he has to be ready to switch to a different set of rocket motors to control the attitude. And Ed is putting the batteries on. These are the small reentry batteries, 3 of them, that they haven't used since the big burn when they left the moon.
This is part of the redundancy, part of the extra systems on board to make sure that they're ready to go when you need them.
Right, and the last thing they do here is arm the pyros. Pyrotechnics provides the logic and the electricity to fire all the things they're going to be needing on the way down now.
We mentioned that 600-meter cloud cover. It looks like it's increased from scattered to broken, and in the distance I can see some rain showers. Apollo Control.
We're now coming up on about 3 minutes to service module separation. Spacecraft velocity is 24,042 feet per second, and we'll see that velocity increase by about 12,000 feet per second in the next 17 minutes. At entry interface, we should be reading about 36,170 feet per second. And at entry, the spacecraft will be about 1,138 nautical miles from the splashdown point.
That's 26,000 kilometers per hour. They'll get up to almost 40,000 kilometers per hour by the time they hit the atmosphere. You're listening to the Voice of America's live coverage of the return to Earth of Apollo 14. This is Rhett Turner in Houston with astronaut Fred Hayes, capsule communicator for Apollo 14, lunar module pilot on Apollo 13. They're having some trouble with the purifying their picture off the carrier New Orleans. We're watching that television transmission from the carrier now here at our studio near the Mission Control in Houston. Fred, continue on these last-minute events. About 1 minute until separation, I believe.
Yeah, they should be all set up. The logic power that I just mentioned that you need to actually affect the separation was the last thing they had to do, and it's just a matter of assuring that you're steady in the right attitude at this point and punching her off.
To the separation attitude. We'll stand by for that event, scheduled to occur within the next minute or so.
Which is pretty dramatic. Like most of the pyro events, things are firing and bolts are breaking loose. And later on, when the chutes and drogues and those things start coming out, those things are happening right over your head. And it's pretty obvious when they happen. They make loud bangs and clangs. And
you're as safe inside your little air-conditioned cocoon there, hopefully.
Ours was very air-conditioned.
We'll get to that later.
Now in separation attitude, yawed 45 degrees from the normal entry attitude. 16, this is to minimize any chance of recontact with the service module after separation.
So they should be all set up and ready to do the separation right about now.
They're out over the Indian Ocean now, moving in an easterly direction. They'll pass down under Australia, past Tasmania, and up across the north of New Zealand and splash down south of Samoa.
Go for fire alarm.
Okay, they just asked permission for fire alarm. What they do is put the logic on and let Houston look and make sure there's nothing wrong with the logic circuit. Then when Houston says it's okay, they'll put the arm switches on. It's really not that time critical to do the separation here.
Separation, Houston. Roger.
Okay. It's confirmation of separation. That was Al Shepard who said, "We've got separation, Houston."
Al Shepard confirming that the service module has separated from the command module. They'll now reorient into the entry attitude.
In the South Pacific, below Samoa, there is a pretty good cloud cover, so we may have some trouble seeing the parachutes at very high altitude.
At this time, we show Apollo 14, 4,393 nautical miles from Earth, 24,042 feet per second, the velocity.
24,000 feet per second, that should convert into about 26,300 kilometers per hour. They'll get up to over 39,000 kilometers per hour very quickly in the next 15 minutes before they hit the outer residue of the atmosphere. Wow, that's picking up speed in a hurry. What does the Earth look like below them there, Fred, at this point?
Well, they're not, unfortunately, not getting too good a look at the Earth. Stu right now has moved back to the entry attitude, I guess with the exception of pitch, and he's tracking the horizon in here. And I would imagine where he's looking at the horizon, it's probably a dark.
Mm-hmm. Is he looking to the west?
He's looking back to the west.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine it's a dark horizon he's looking at, or at least it was for us, and you really couldn't see that much out there.
Mm-hmm. Their splash point will be at, it'll be 11 o'clock in the morning near Samoa. That means that it will be, they'll be going through dawn at about the time of entry, coming across Australia, just before Australia. Looking to the west, darkness out across the Indian Ocean toward Africa.
You know, they'll pick up, I'm sure, the Earth below them after they get probably about through the blackout phase on entry.
12 minutes now until entry interface. It's about 15 minutes after the separation maneuver until they hit the outer residue of atmosphere, some 122,000 meters above the surface of the Earth, 400,000 feet. And that will occur. Now, as what is the significance of this 95-degree east point, which is referred to quite often here? Are you
The time... No, I don't. The time we have of interest is what we call RRT time. And it, from that time, we start our watches, and we go from there on all the other events. The delta time from that start.
Mm-hmm. That's zero from, when you count up displays.
Well, we count up to a lot of events, like O5G, B-Circ, start of blackout, end of blackout, drogue times. All of those are counted from RRT. And I'm not really sure what this that may be for people that are more worried about trajectories and plots and things.
They are at about 95 degrees east longitude, if you're following this, and about 30 degrees latitude south, 32 south, at this point of separation. They're moving now in a southeasterly direction. They'll go south of Perth, Australia, off the coast, about 150, 200 kilometers, then swing down, and actually before Earth interface, before hitting that 122,000 meter high hole in the sky, they're going to pass right down across King's Island between Tasmania and Melbourne, and right across the Fourneau Group between Tasmania and the Melbourne mainland of Australia, and our listeners down there would be interested to know about that. And we'll try to keep you posted about when they're going over King Island, the Fourneau Group, Tasmania, and south of Melbourne. And also, when the interface occurs, it will be about halfway between the Australia mainland and New Zealand. In fact, it's almost due west of Auckland. The position of entry interface is about 36 degrees south, and about 164 degrees east, if you happen to have a map there following this on a ground track.
Let's see, we have about 10 minutes to RRT. A couple of other things I may bring up. Stu is tracking the horizon mainly for the purpose of getting a check at about 2 minutes before RRT, where the pitch error needle for the primary guidance system should pass through zero. And if it coincides with that time when he's been tracking the horizon, which is a good visual reference, then it sort of tells you that the primary guidance system is good. And it's kind of a decision point on whether you should worry about taking over and flying it manually on the EMS or not.
Really, there was no real worry at this point after all of this tracking and refined data about hitting that interface position.
No.
Now,
no.
Hours, 18 minutes. We're now reading the onboard display, the numbers that the crew is reading for entry velocity and range to go. And their computer shows them to be traveling at a velocity of 31,955 feet per second, continuing to increase 4,000 miles from splashdown.
Now, the laws of Kepler assure you that you're going to hit the entry interface at the right point based on all the tracking you did earlier and the mid-course maneuvers and everything else you did that tried to assure that you would arrive at that point. And there's no question about you're going to hit the atmosphere at that point. The only point I was bringing up is whether the control from the primary guidance system would be good through the remainder of the entry when you hit the atmosphere.
That will come in about 8 minutes. Eight and a half minutes until entry begins.
The onset of that is fairly interesting because you're sitting there sort of minding your own business, and before you even feel any forces build up in the way of gravity, or G, the whole outside of the spacecraft around all the windows becomes very white. I guess I would... maybe a good analogy would be if you could imagine yourself inside of a neon bulb. And the early part of the entry, to me, had that sort of visual aspect. Of course, being the LMP, I didn't have too much to do during that whole period except look out the window. The other guys were busy flying it or monitoring it. And
you were in the middle seat.
No, I was on the right side. I had kind of a free ride over there and could just...
Don't you watch a bunch of instruments over there?
Not really.
Systems? Monitoring?
If they've been good for the last, in this case, 216 hours, I wouldn't be worried about them too much at this point. They ought to last another few minutes.
You mentioned about your air-conditioned cocoon and the fact that yours was well air-conditioned. Our listeners may well recall that on Apollo 13, due to the emergency conditions, in order for you and Swigert and Lovell to survive, you had to power down, so it got pretty chilly inside there. In fact, you were right...
14, this is Houston, over.
Call from McCandless, Bruce McCandless. 7 minutes till entry begins. No answer yet from Al Shepard or Mitchell or Arusa.
Honeysuckle Comtech, Houston Comtech, Net 1, Comtech.
Loud and clear.
Some of the
Roger,
network checking
here. Honeysuckle.
Roger.
That's part of the tracking
Apollo
network.
Apollo 14, Apollo 14, this is Houston. Say again, you're very weak, over.
Okay, Houston, we have had good separation. We're back in plane, following the horizon down, over.
Roger, we copy you now, loud and clear.
Apparently somebody had to throw another switch right fast there.
Yep. And you're looking very good from down here, 14.
To get the communication.
Okay, everything's fine up here.
That's Al Shepard. Everything's fine up here, he says. Tracking the horizon down, just as you indicated. They're watching that horizon out to the west, Fred.
Apollo 14, now 3,200 miles from the splash point. Velocity 33,805 feet per second.
It's really building up fast. I got to flip the pages of my...
Yep. Another thing that's different to them right now is after shedding the service module, they're using the little rockets on the command module for attitude control. These things are very close to you. They're a different type of rocket, and they have a sharp, raspy noise as compared to the ka-thunks that you normally hear from the service module reaction control jets, which are further away from the cockpit.
In about 5 minutes' time, they've built up speed from some 26,000 kilometers per hour up to a speed now of 37,000 kilometers per hour. That is accelerating like I've never conceived of before. Do you get a sense of that at all?
No, not at all. Not nearly as much as the going the other way at TLI, where you're starting at 25,000 feet a second and ending up at about 36,000 and about a six-minute burn.
This is Apollo Control, 4 minutes, 45 seconds from entry, and it's grown unusually quiet here in the control center. On board the spacecraft, the crew now reading 2,800 miles until splashdown. Their velocity shows 34,465 feet per second.
Still building up very fast. It'll get over 39,000 kilometers per hour, almost 40,000 kilometers per hour by the time the craft hits the atmosphere in 4 minutes and 15 seconds from right now. On board the carrier, we can see our television picture coming in from those white-suited sailors there standing by a helicopter on the helicopter carrier New Orleans. They're cruising in a five-mile circle, maybe they've slowed down now, around the target point. I don't think there's a pretty good cloud cover down there in the South Pacific,
14,
too, today.
This is Houston. We show you with 98.4 amp hours left on the water, and it's 56 hours endurance, over.
Plenty of power.
98.4 and 56. Thank you.
Roger.
That power supply in good stead. It's been waiting. It's been resting throughout the mission. All the way until now, until this period before being fired up, these batteries in the command module. They're bringing back a lot of extra rocks and weight with them, too, this time.
Yes, I'm sure happy to see that, too.
Oh,
the batteries have been used, but only during the major engine burns, and we have a battery charger on that they've replenished them after each use. So they are pretty full.
They weren't completely sacrosanct until this point, then.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful view there in the Pacific. It's 11 o'clock in the morning. The sun angle is very nice, and with scattered to broken clouds about 600 meters, a rain shower in the distance, just a little light shower, it appears. Visibility is about 16 kilometers. Winds are easterly, waves gentle, about 1.5 meters.
Moon set,
Houston. Moon set. Yep. Now, this occurs...
Yeah, that was the real moon, Bob.
2:16:25:15, so it was right on time.
The spacecraft has just passed over King Island, is just about now coming across north of Tasmania over the Forno Islands group, south of Melbourne. That's the point at which they would see the moon set. That was at 25 minutes, 15 seconds, right on
time. Right on time.
After 260
Stu here is
hours.
Waiting for another check. We start counting up from RRT for the 05G point, and this is where the...
That's five-tenths of a
five-tenths
gravity.
Five-hundredths,
really.
Yeah, five-hundredths, and that's where the primary guidance system should switch to another phase of the entry programs, to P-64 from P-63.
This is part of the computerized automatic pilot system,
right.
This P-64, P-63.
And we're coming up on RRT in about another minute.
RRT, that's your terminology for the beginning of entry.
That's right.
The 400,000-foot mark, the place where the atmosphere begins, right?
Well, I'm not sure that represents that point as
it's
much
a
as a counting point for us to
all
subsequent events.
This is Houston through Araya 2. How do you read, over?
Not clear, Houston.
Roger, reading you the same, 14.
Better see from the checklist.
This is being relayed through an aircraft. Al Shepard's voice to Mission Control.
Roger. And thanks to the Orion group for the memento they sent before launch.
Okay, I'll pass it on to the rest of them. I'm sure some of them are monitoring the loop.
Some thanks to the Orion group for something they sent before launch?
Yes, I'm not sure what that was.
Through one of the Apollo range instrumented aircraft. Our velocity now showing 36,000 feet per second, 1,500 miles from splashdown. And we're 24 seconds from entry.
Now 39,500 kilometers per hour. Wow, is that speed built up in a hurry. Fred's counting down, ready to start a clock from RRT to splash.
That is time at 400K.
Mm-hmm.
No, I just saw on the checklist there.
122,000 meters, 400,000 feet, where the atmosphere begins. Entry interface.
We're now at the entry point. In about 18 seconds, we should have blackout. That'll last until about 3 minutes, 35 seconds after entry.
Yeah, Apollo 14, that's about 8 seconds to the beginning of blackout. We'll talk to you when you come out the other side, over.
The entry is beginning. They're halfway between Australia and New Zealand now.
Blackout.
Was it 2 seconds late? He said you were
it looked like, if we could judge Ed's answer there, it looked like about 20 seconds rather than 18.
Mm-hmm. That's inconsequential, really, at this point. They have now hit the 0.05G. They can feel gravity beginning to build
and
up.
Our retro officer has just predicted
it's
that the target
up,
point will
fast
be the
here.
Splash point. We're coming up now on about 30 seconds until max G, maximum G-force of about 6.2 Gs.
They're probably going through about 4 Gs now.
Four times the pull of Earth's gravity. Another 15 seconds, they will feel the maximum of over 6 Gs.
And after
we're now 1 minute, 20 seconds after entry, about coming up now on the maximum G forces, 6.2 Gs at this time.
That's Doug Ward in Mission Control as our mission commentator.
And we're about 2 minutes from end of blackout.
Yeah, from this point on, the primary guidance system will strive to hold 4 Gs until it senses that the you have the right amount of energy to make the landing point. And when it gets to that line, it will switch the system to the final landing program, which is P-67, which really does all the tweaking and the rolling and everything to try to hit exactly on the money on the landing spot.
About another minute and 10 seconds until the end of blackout. Norm Guerin in Washington.
You're listening to the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 14. Now to Stuart Spencer for a downrange report.
On the carrier New Orleans, correspondent Bill Larson is our pool reporter serving the various networks and the Voice of America. Bill reports the weather excellent for the splashdown. The seas are very slight, the water temperature 78 degrees, the winds 13 knots, the skies broken clouds at about 1,500 feet. Norm?
Now back to the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston and correspondent Rhett Turner.
Stuart Spencer there is monitoring reports directly off the carrier in New Orleans. Now, Fred, let's see. 2:55, 2:56, about another half minute until
right,
the end of blackout.
30 seconds to end of blackout. The picture has changed somewhat for them in this interval. The white glow I'd mentioned earlier that you see just as you initially enter the atmosphere.
Officer just estimated that blackout will end about 1 second prior to the predicted time at an elapsed time of 3 minutes, 34 seconds after entry. That would be about 15 seconds from now.
They passed across Three Kings Island just north of New Zealand, across, and the blackout will end right over the Kermadec Islands, Macaulay Island, Curtis Island area, northwest.
And we should have come out of blackout.
Northeast.
We'll stand by for reestablishment of communications through the Apollo range instrumented aircraft. Capcom McCandless putting in a call to the crew now.
We're monitoring Mission Control, putting in a call to see if the radio communication is now restored after the blackout. Of course, during that blackout period when the plasma sheath boils away and dissipates the heat energy, you can't transmit through there very well. Are we very near some method of communication to get through that type of burnout, Fred?
No, and I really think in terms of the way you operate in that region.
We have still not acquired signal through the Araya aircraft. Retro says our last data looked very good. Should be right on the splash point.
There would not be any advantage to being able to talk in that period. You're sort of committed down that path, and you're either going to make it or you're not.
So we really, there's no reason for us to get upset or worry unduly because we lose communication. We've done this since the beginning of manned spaceflight with all of these craft re-entry.
Apollo 14, this is Houston through Araya 3. How do you read? Over.
There's McCandless calling. They've got a clear spot, a clear break in the clouds.
Okay, 14, now you're coming in loud and a little bit of noise through Araya 3. How'd it go? Good show, Stu. On television, looks like a beautiful day out there in the recovery area.
I heard Ed Mitchell and then Stu Russo. Now, that's being relayed through one of the C-130 Air Range Instrumentation Aircraft, Araya, another one of those acronyms the space program's full of. In fact,
right.
All of you guys talk in acronyms to the point where I wonder if I am communicating and trying to relay them.
Now, Stu was saying
14
that...
14 Houston, Samoa Rescue 1 has S-band lock with you, over.
He's the radar is tracking from Samoa. The Samoa radar is tracking them. You were going to say Stu was
what? Stu was saying that both his primary guidance system as well as his EMS or the backup system were agreeing very well. Which gives you quite a bit of confidence that you're going to be pretty close. No, I didn't hear the last message.
Somewhat unintelligible comment there through the rather staticky communication. Now this...
and a half minutes from splash, about 2 minutes, a minute and a half, rather, from drogue deploy. 6+2A14.
Hey, the voices coming that way sound like he's talking from in a barrel or something. It's an echo.
We're getting some... high-frequency shortwave relaying here, too. I can tell from the type of atmospherics. That was one comment. This is a bit unintelligible, but those are the voices from Apollo 14
The drogue chute is the tiny chute which opens before the main and helps pull it out. You're listening to the astronauts as they're... About how high are they at drogue deploy?
At drogue deploy, you're at about 24,000 feet.
2704.
That's Shepard.
2704.
172, 69er. Yep. Okay, we copy that, 14. You're looking real good.
And the altimeter's off the peg.
Altimeter's off the peg.
50 Cambridge.
Roger, passing 50.
50,000 feet. Yep. You're through now.
50,000 feet. They're just dropping like a rocket now.
Read by Al Shepard indicate the spacecraft guidance system targeted for a precise splashdown.
Just a few seconds now until drogue chute deploy, about another 4 or 5 seconds. We may hear it from Shepard. They say they hear some thunks. Huh?
Yeah, they're very, very loud when the apex cover is released,
deploy,
and the drogues come out, and then the mains, too. All of those events are very noisy, right over your head.
Drogues are out.
14, copy drogue deploy, and we'll turn you over to the recovery forces now. Have a happy landing.
So now they're just waiting for 10,000 feet to back up manually deploying the mains if they don't come out automatically.
The main parachutes. But these drogue chutes are pretty surefire things.
Now for the 383-foot diameter ring sail main chutes to come out.
The main chute should have been deployed by now. Let's go back to Stuart Spencer.
Bill Larson has reported a sighting. Let's go now to the carrier New Orleans.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. A beautiful sight here from the prime recovery ship USS New Orleans. We have in sight the Apollo 14 command module, that brilliant orange, those brilliant orange 77-foot main chutes opened for us to see as they were opening. They're in their disrepositioned position now, fully open to their 77-foot diameter for each of the chutes. A beautiful sight, drifting down to its splashdown point at some 32 feet per second. We saw that spacecraft as it came down on its drogue chutes. Then watch as these main chutes came out into their reef position or partially closed position. Then as they open up into that full position, drifting beautifully. 5 nautical miles away from the prime recovery ship USS New Orleans. That would be almost exactly on that splashdown point because we were sailing in a 5-nautical-mile radius around that splashdown point. We do have